Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu. Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter, dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Who made a better case for your vote in last night's presidential debate? President Barack Obama or Governor Mitt Romney? That's today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are broadcasting on location from the Pabst Theater Pub in downtown Milwaukee. Yay! So if you are in the Milwaukee area, please come on down. We'll be here until 11 o'clock this morning. We're going to be talking politics and media and other election 2012 issues. Every Wednesday at 7 o'clock, we pick an issue that's facing the state or nation, and then we find two guests from different perspectives to debate it. And today, the big question debate is last night's presidential debate. What did you think of it? Did one candidate do a better job to convince you that he deserves your vote? 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to join us on air, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or if you're here with us in Milwaukee, and you are, by the way, invited to join us here in Milwaukee and in our studio audience here at the Pabst Pub at the Pabst Theater, you can raise your hand, and my producer, Amanda Magnus, will get to you with her microphone. Well, let me welcome our guests. We're very happy to have with us Owen Robinson, columnist at the West Bend Daily News, blogger at Boots and Sabers.com. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Joy.
And also with us is Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's really great to see both of you in person. Usually you are in Milwaukee on the telephone, and I am in the studios in Madison. So that's another nice thing about getting out of the studio and getting to a public venue like this in another community, is I actually get to see what my guests look like.
not always a good thing.
Well, let's. I stayed up late last night. Normally, I am very early to bed, very early to rise, but I wanted to see last night's debate. I'm functioning on a very little sleep, but boy, it seemed to me that it was really quite the feisty affair. There was a lot of sparring going on. A lot of, I think the New York Times called it a slugfest or something along those lines. Let's get you to answer today's big question first, Owen. Who made a better case in the presidential debate?
Well, I think feisty is going to be the new gravitas of this election cycle, it appears, because every debate we're talking about it. I agree with that. I do think it was much more feisty than it has been in the past. Obviously, I think both sides appealed to their base quite a bit. I think the Democrats are probably quite happy, and I'm sure Ed will comment on this, to see Obama come out swinging. From my perspective, Romney made a case. He had that one question where he just dismantled Obama's record and actually had a plan for talking about the next 4 years. Obama had a lot of difficulty defending his record and really didn't put forth any plan for the next 4 years. So from a content perspective, I'd say Romney had the upper hand. I think from a stylistic and from coming into it with certain expectations, I'd say Obama probably edged it out.
Well, Ed, what do you think?
Well, I think if Romney dominated the first debate, I think Obama clearly dominated last night. So I think that we're back where we started. The first debate, Obama was passive. He allowed Romney the room to tell his story, to fill the vacuum. And I think that was simply a tactical error. At that time, Romney was imploding. His campaign was a mess. You don't get in the way of your opponent when they're self-destructing. But I think that was a mistake. So now Obama dominated the discussion. He framed the debate on his terms. Romney came across as a mix of slogans and attack lines.
Do you think that President Obama did anything to stem Mitt Romney's momentum? The polls really tightened after that first debate. Do you expect it to change at all?
I think that I always expected the polls to tighten. And really what we were seeing was the Romney campaign self-destructing. And once they righted their ship, then it was obvious it was going to come back to that close race. It's always been, in my mind, a race that's going to be a close race. I think that this helps Obama a great deal, and I think that the parallel might be 1984, where Reagan tanked the first debate with Mondale came back strong the second debate and won re-election.
Mm-hmm. Owen, do you expect the polls to change at all?
I think what we've seen is certainly Romney does have the momentum. I don't see any performance last night that would stem that. I think I think that momentum will continue. I think Obama really needed to come out and defeat Romney as badly as Romney defeated him in the first debate to really change things.
So what did you think Mitt Romney's best moment was or exchange?
I thought after the gentleman asked President Obama that, you know, said he voted for him in the last election and asked, you know, said he'd disappointed, didn't have that same love, I guess, for Obama, and I don't know the actual wording for it off the top of my head. But then Romney came out and, when he was asked that question, which was a bit odd anyway. There was two instances where there were questions directed at a specific candidate, and then the other candidate had to answer, which was just kind of weird from a debate format standpoint. But after that, when Romney came on, he really went through the litany of Obama's record, item by item, and where Obama had made promises and not delivered, unemployment's up and the job market's in poor shape, where Afghanistan is declining and foreign affairs, and just went item by item and dismantled his record. And Obama really had no answer after that.
Ed Filon, did Obama answer the marks on his record?
Well, I think Obama did an excellent job of standing up for and underlining his accomplishments over the past 4 years, and they are substantial. I mean, I think health care reform is a substantial accomplishment. I think the fact that he's been creating jobs for the last 30 months is a substantial accomplishment. Obviously, the killing of Osama bin Laden. I think that, you know, Romney's strong point is doom and gloom. We are coming out of a very severe recession. You would expect times to be tough. He does a very good job telling us that times are tough. But doom and gloom only get you so far. You have to have substantive policies. You have to have a prescription for making things better. And there, Romney can't even defend his tax plan. He can't defend his jobs numbers. He can't even defend his own policies.
Did you think, Ed Filon, that President Obama had a high point in the debate?
Well, I think he had several high points. As always, you know, he just simply has to point out Romney's self-destructive or self-defeating policy prescriptions. He defends the bailout of Detroit and the auto industry. That's a huge winner for him. He makes that point strongly. It helps him in Ohio. He simply points to his foreign policy successes with al-Qaeda. And so I think that Obama made some strong points. I mean, obviously, we're in a recession with a very slow recovery, so he can't get up and you know, claim all kinds of good times are here again, let's party. But on the other hand, I think he came across as someone who's completely in control and sees a path for the future.
And Owen, do you think Mitt Romney answered those points?
I think he did, and I think if you look at some of the early polling afterwards, not the instant polls, but CNN actually had some polling overnight after it, and you see, although Obama edged out overall on the debate, on the issues of the economy, on jobs, on the deficit, on federal spending, on all those issues, Romney won far and away. And if you look at the issues that are important to Americans right now, those are the issues that matter.
Well, we usually don't like to say it this way, but in a way we are discussing who won the debate last night. We're asking who made a better case in the presidential debate, who made a better case for your vote. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. If you're here in our on-location audience at the Pabst Pub at the Pabst Theater, just raise your hand and we'll get a microphone to you if you would like to talk about the issues that were discussed in last night's second presidential debate. It's going to be partly cloudy this morning, then becoming a mostly cloudy day statewide with showers likely across the state, some thunderstorms possible in the south this afternoon. Highs today from around 60 in the northwest to the upper 60s in the southeast. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Pabst Theater Pub in downtown Milwaukee. It's very nice to have a studio audience, an on-location audience. It's very nice to put a face to a listener, so thanks very much for coming down. If you're in the Milwaukee area, you're invited to come down. We're going to be here with the Joy Cardine Show until 9 o'clock this morning. Then Kathleen Dunn will be here from 9 until 11. So we'll be broadcasting all morning long, talking a lot about politics. We are talking about last night's presidential debate during this hour. It's our big question debate. And we're asking who made a better case in the presidential debate. Was it President Obama or Governor Romney? And why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I want to play a clip from last night's debate. This one is getting some attention this morning. This is Barack Obama and Mitt Romney talking about the attack on Benghazi. Let's take a listen.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of terror.
Can you say that a little louder, Candy?
He did call it an act of terror. It did as well take 2 weeks or so for the whole idea of there being a riot out there about this tape to come out. You're correct about that.
The administration.
All right, so Owen Robinson, was that, did Mitt Romney, was that a low point for him or not?
I think on the issue, Romney was correct. I think stylistically he did a poor job of making that point. But if you actually look at Obama's speech in the Rose Garden afterwards, he didn't mention acts of terror, and it was acts plural till the seventh paragraph after he had referred to things like 9/11 and other terrorist attacks we've had in the past. He never specifically called it an act of terror. And in fact, his surrogates came out on television for weeks afterwards, which is what the moderator, Candy, pointed out there as well, blaming the video, blaming YouTube video. And now we know that was completely false. So the question for President Obama is if he knew it was an act of terror that first day in the Rose Garden, why did he allow his administration surrogates to go out and make that claim and blame a YouTube video instead of treating it like the act of terror it was?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Ed, but weren't they saying that this, they were saying there were protests over that video, but that they were hijacked by the terrorists?
Well, I think it's not surprising that in the immediate aftermath of the attack that the facts were unclear and that there needed to be further exploration of what really happened. I think, however, the president from the start indicated acts of terror had occurred. And if your criticism of the president is that he mentioned this in the seventh paragraph instead of the first paragraph, well, that's pretty thin rule. I think that Romney's comments on Libya were a problem for him for two reasons. First of all, the fact that he didn't even know what the president had said in the Rose Garden ceremony underscores his lack of preparation, the same sort of lack of preparation we saw in his ill-fated overseas trip a few months ago, where he just blundered into meetings with foreign leaders seemingly unprepared. And the second thing is it underscores his desire to politicize foreign crises in a way that's rather unseemly, that we saw right while the attacks were still going on in Benghazi, that he was putting out press releases before we even knew what was happening. So I think that this simply reinforces two negatives about Romney on foreign affairs.
We have a caller, Michael in La Crosse, who wants to talk about this particular exchange. Hello, Michael. You're on the air.
Good morning. I believe that President Obama clearly showed himself as Commander-in-Chief on this issue, and that Governor Romney's comments and sticking point on this issue is just deplorable. That, as the commentator said, that in an event like that, there's often a lag time of just finding facts, and that's my comment.
Thank you very much, Michael, for the comment. Owen, did Governor Romney try to politicize that too soon?
Well, first off, I mean, there is often confusion after an attack like that, but the fact is that the president's own administration came out with a storyline blaming the videos, blaming the terrorists spun off of that, when in fact we now know there were no protests. And according to sworn congressional testimony, we knew that within days after the attack, even though the administration had that storyline for weeks afterwards. So as far as Romney politicizing it, the fact is we are in the midst of a presidential debate, and foreign policy matters. And what we saw here was not just the failure of Obama's Middle East policy and his Libyan policy, but we saw an active cover-up by the administration. These are important issues the American people need to consider when deciding who their next commander-in-chief is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't think Owen meant to use the words cover-up, because that refers to specific actions to hide the truth, and in fact, there are no specific actions being taken to hide the truth, and there are ongoing investigations, so there is no cover-up. I think that when you have the Romney campaign, top aides to Romney telling reporters weeks ago that there would be some big foreign policy event in October that they would make hay out of, and then lo and behold, they try and make hay out of a big foreign policy event in October, one does have to question the bona fides of the Romney campaign here.
Well, let's take another call. We have time before news. Let's go to Linda in Monroe for our next call. Go ahead, Linda. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Great program. Good morning, gentlemen. I definitely think this debate was different than the first one, which I believe President Obama won. Now, the issue of fair taxes came up, why Mitt Romney, the richest candidate ever running for president, pays his income tax at only a 14% rate. Now, I feel President Obama made an issue out of getting the debt paid and being fair about doing it.
All right. Thank you very much, Linda. Well, let's start with Ed on that. I suppose you agree with Linda?
Well, yes. I mean, Romney's so-called tax plan does not stand up to any kind of scrutiny. He's essentially saying, let's cut all tax rates 20%, and we're also going to eliminate the estate tax. We're going to eliminate the alternative minimum tax. So we're going to say that $250 billion a year in federal revenue is going to disappear. How are you going to make that up? And, you know, the answer is, from Romney, we're going to eliminate deductions, the mortgage interest deduction, favorable treatment for life insurance, favorable treatment for municipal bond, charitable deduction. We'll do away with that, and therefore we'll raise more revenue. The problem with that for Romney is twofold. First of all, these are very popular deductions, especially with the middle class, which is why he's trying to backtrack and now say he won't eliminate them completely. And second of all, even if you eliminate all of those deductions and preferable treatments, you still come nowhere near to making up the $250 billion a year that the federal government has lost. And so you're just going to explode the deficit, or else you're going to substantially slash other federal spending.
Owen?
Well, Linda, thank you for your call. And I do want to go, going back to the previous hour, that Monroe is a wonderful city, and I believe has the last Limburger cheese plant in the United States. So if you ever get a chance to visit.
I'm glad we don't have Limburger to taste, but that's okay.
But I want to address this issue about the Romney tax rate, the 14% and all that, because Romney, for all practical purposes, has been unemployed since he started running for president a while ago. His income comes off of investment income, so we're talking about the capital gains tax there, not the income tax. They are entirely separate topics, and when we talk about the capital gain tax versus the income tax, we can have that discussion about whether we should increase taxes on people who are earning money off of investments versus income, but let's not confuse the two. They are separate taxes.
We have another caller, Steve in La Crosse, who has a comment. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. I just wanted to point out a couple of things as far as media bias and the presentation of the debate last night. I felt like it really favored the president. A couple of things. First, with the camera angles, when Governor Romney was speaking, they often, much more often than the president, zoomed way out and made it very difficult to see the president. And on ABC in particular, they actually had a moving graphic that really distracted the viewers from what he was saying, and I think that was done on purpose. Rather, when Obama was speaking, they actually focused in, and it almost looked like an Obama commercial with a side profile, and I thought it was very biased. And as far as the moderator, I felt like she was biased also. She gave the president a chance to follow up on questions that weren't actually his turn to have the last word on. And she also was much more firm in cutting off the governor when it was his time to stop speaking than she was with the president. And I felt like it was very biased.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve, because we have limited time before we need to take a news break. Was this debate set up biased in President Obama's favor? Ed, do you have a comment?
Well, I would just say I noticed that Romney wanted to direct his attacks directly at Obama, probably because he was told that would make him appear strong. But what that meant is he turned his back to the audience many times. And that's probably, in my opinion, why the camera had a hard time focusing on him. In a town hall, you should look at the audience. You should connect with the audience. That's what Obama did. Romney was trying to talk to Obama.
Did you have any problems with the debate setup, Owen?
I thought agreeing with the caller, I thought it leaned towards Obama. If you just look at the list of questions, how is Romney not like Bush? How is Obama going to bring back the magic from the previous election? Equal pay for women. I mean, these are issues that are perceived to be in Obama's favor if you just look at the list of the questions. And certainly in that one instance with the Libya question where the moderator jumped in actually defending Obama's point, which she did back off of on CNN last night after the debate.
She also, though, said that Governor Romney had a point with the confusing messages, too.
Correct. She did. But I think if you look at just the overall tenor, and now as far as the optics and how that came across, I didn't really see much bias there. But I think just in the line of questioning and the way the follow-ups were done, I do think it leaned toward Obama.
The questions favored Obama because reality favors Obama.
Well, did you think that Candy Crowley was favoring Obama?
No. I tend to rely on my wife's reaction on this, and she felt she was cheering on Candy Crowley. She said, "I want to hear the answers. I want you to keep the candidates from just launching into canned campaign sound bites." And so she was applauding Candy Crowley for actually trying to keep them to answering the questions and trying to keep them on focus. And I think many people watching felt the same way.
Yeah, it seemed to me, Owen, that she would try to get both of the candidates to shut up, and they would not.
She attempted on occasion, but there were certain instances, like there at the end, where Obama completely ducked the Fast and Furious issue and went off on this soliloquy on education funding in America, which had nothing to do with the guns question that was just asked. She let him roll on for quite a while, and if you look at the time after the debate, Obama actually spoke for almost three more minutes than Romney did, even though it was supposed to be equal time.
Well, we just have a short time before a news break. I didn't get to see a lot of news coverage this morning, starting so early, but I think that most of the polls did show uncommitted voters thought gave the edge to President Obama on last night's debate. Ed, you're nodding.
Yeah, the instant polls that I saw gave the edge to Obama, not just nationwide, but also in some critical swing states. So I think the reaction was strong because he dealt directly with substantive issues.
Owen?
Certainly some of the instant polls did. I think as we see the more scientific polls come out of next week, we'll see what the real results are. I do think it's interesting if you look, for instance, at the latest Gallup poll that has Romney up 50 to 46 with only 2% uncommitted and 2% for another candidate. I don't think there's a lot of uncommitted voters left.
This is our big question debate. We are talking about last night's presidential debate, and we're wondering who you think made the better case. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back broadcasting live from the Pabst Theater Pub. I'm Joy Cardine and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are broadcasting on location at the Pabst Theater Pub in downtown Milwaukee, and you are invited to join us. We have a wonderful studio audience. We have coffee, pastries, we have guests, and if you're in the Milwaukee area, please come on down. We will be here until 11 o'clock this morning talking politics and media and other election 2012 issues. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll have a panel of guests, including Eugene Kane from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and others, talking about media coverage of election 2012. Right now, this is our big question debate. We have two guests from different perspectives debating last night's presidential debate. And we're wondering who you think made a better case for your vote in last night's debate. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have with us two guests who are usually with us in our Week in Review program, which is every Friday from 8 until 9. They are both regular guests in our Week in Review feature, and they agreed to join us on location this morning. We're very happy they did so. Ed Filone is Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Owen Robinson is a columnist at the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. I want to talk about some of the other issues in last night's debate, including, Owen, you brought it up just before news, that you thought some of the questions were in President Obama's favor, including the question about women's issues. That issue is getting a lot of attention this morning. I think there was even a Twitter account that was established called Mitts Binders. Apparently, Governor Romney said that when he was Massachusetts governor, he tried to get more women in his administration, and then said that he had more women in his administration than any other state at that time. But he said that women's groups gave him binders full of names of women who might be in his administration. Do you think that Mitt Romney made a case that he would be good for women?
Well, we do love our sound bites, don't we, in these news cycles. Honestly, and I was actually talking with Ed about this off the air during the break, I think both candidates flubbed that question pretty badly in that, and here again, I have to look at my wife and my daughters, and both of them treated as if women needed that extra hand. They needed help as if they weren't equal players in the workforce. And I think that's insulting, frankly. And I think that women should be treated as equal. They should have equal shots and equal chances at jobs. And that's what we need to focus on, is equality of opportunity in our economy.
And apparently the Twitter account was Romney's Binders. I'm sorry, I correct myself. Ed?
Binders of Women. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great meme. I think, you know, once again, we see the essential problem with Romney's campaign. He goes on record opposing, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, fair pay for equal pay for women for equal work. He takes this extreme right-wing position in order to win the Republican nomination, and then he tries to pivot back and say, "No, I'm actually moderate. Look, I appointed women to my cabinet in Massachusetts. Look at this moderate position I took. Why, it's almost as if I supported affirmative action for women." And I'm sure we'll see now the walk back from his campaign handlers saying, no, Mitt is opposed to affirmative action. He didn't really mean it. So what we see is this veneer of trying to appear reasonable and moderate, but still he's committed himself to policies that, quite frankly, many women disagree with.
Was it just me, or did he make? Did Governor Romney make a bit of a mistake when he said we need more flexible work schedules so women can get off work and go home and make dinner?
That's an area where I thought it was a flub. I think that again, women and men should be treated equal in the economy and have equal opportunity. And I do think, though, when you hold up things like where Romney did succeed is he's actually done it. And as opposed to signing a bill saying that we will do something, he actually did it in his personal life and showed that personal integrity on that issue. So I think that's where there's a lot of times that both sides, or all sides, if you will hold up certain bills or certain organizations as these talismans, where if you don't support that bill, then suddenly you're completely wrong on the issue, whereas you may have other ways of achieving the same goals.
We have a listener in our On Location audience, Cletus, who has a comment. Hi, Cletus.
Yeah, well, Owen doesn't seem to get the point, as Romney didn't get the point, is that women that get hired, sure, but they don't get paid as much. And that's where the Lilly Ledbetter bill comes in, where people get paid equally.
Owen?
Well, if you look at statistically across the economy, it is true that women don't statistically make as much as men on the aggregate. That has a lot to do with some cultural norms we have in America, where we do make choices where some women do choose to stay home with children and take out that portion of their career where they don't advance as quickly. I will tell you that in my career, I've had several bosses that were women, and they were paid a heck of a lot more than me. So I think that if you're given an equal opportunity in organizations, it's something we need to continue to work on, but it is part of our culture.
Let's take another caller. Ron in Whitefish Bay is with us now. Hello, Ron.
Hi. I'd like to say that Romney has been hammering the president, you know, this entire past year on the economy, that it hasn't grown and so forth. If things had been changed 4 years ago and Romney had been elected, and he had a Congress that said, you know what, our job 8 days after an election is to destroy you and basically not let a doggone thing go through so that we can regain the White House in 4 years. What the heck would Romney have done? What changes? We know he would have let GM fail and possibly the banks fail, and we'd be in a worse mess than what we are now. So what would he have done differently with the economy that was handed to the president?
All right. Thank you very much, Ron. Owen, what do you think he'd have done differently?
I certainly can't speak for Governor Romney, but I would say that something that we tend to forget is that when Obama assumed office, he did have a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate. And through that Congress, he passed Obamacare, he passed the stimulus, he passed numerous bills that were right up into his agenda and passing his agenda. He got what he wanted in those first 2 years, and now we see the results. So had Romney had a sympathetic Congress that was a Republican House and Republican Senate, I suspect we would have a very different economy right now.
Ed?
Well, I think the caller makes a good point, and I think that there's this magical thinking that if only a Republican had been in the White House, we wouldn't have had the recession. Well, the fact was the recession started under George W. Bush. It intensified in the first months of the Obama administration. Obama is not responsible for the recession. What he's responsible for is the policies that have been creating jobs, private sector jobs, bringing us back in a very consistent manner. The stimulus worked. It was the right thing to do. If anything, it should have been bigger. I think that the essential, if I could just make this one point, the essential falsity or dishonesty of the Romney campaign is to try and simply say things are bad and it's Obama's fault and everything's Obama's fault and if you replaced him, things would be wonderful. And I think the low point of the debate was when Romney said high gas prices are a direct result of the Obama administration's failures. I mean, that is just a craven, blatant lie. Gas prices are set by market forces. There's very little the president can do to control the price of any market-based good. And to say high prices at the pump are directly the result of Obama's policies just shows you how Romney is trying to lay every negative aspect of the world we live in at the feet of the Obama administration.
Owen, was that fair?
Well, that is the nature of presidential politics. And if you want to criticize Romney for that, we have to go back to Obama and criticize. He blamed Bush for high gas prices. He blamed Bush for the recession. He blamed Bush for Iraq, for, at that time, Afghanistan was the good war to Obama. But he did blame the president for all those things. I think it's a recognition that the American people have that the president does have influence over these things. Certainly his policies have ramifications on our economy and on our world. However, he's not solely responsible. But in the cycle of presidential politics, we do have to assign responsibility.
I do blame Bush for Iraq.
Who won the debate, the exchange over oil and energy, where Mitt Romney was accusing the president of being anti-oil drilling, and the president was saying, well, wait a minute, we're drilling more than ever before.
Well, on the facts here, Romney is correct in that the we are pumping more oil and natural gas in America now despite Obama's policies. It's happening on private property. It's happening because of fracking and things that many of the people in his base oppose. The EPA has a study that will come out on fracking. I think it's scheduled for January or February, right after the election, of course, where it's widely assumed that if Obama's still president, they'll want to take over control of those private fracking enterprises. But the fact is that during Obama's administration, they've issued 62% fewer offshore permits for on federal land and federal offshore waters, and 36% overall. So we are pumping less. We are allowing private enterprises to pump less oil off of federal land.
Well, I think Obama made an excellent explanation of his energy policy, and it actually makes a lot of sense going forward, certainly more sense than Romney's. Romney's cherry-picking facts. He's not accounting for the moratorium when we halted all offshore oil drilling after the oil spill in the Gulf Coast, which, of course, was the responsible thing to do when you're trying to make sure that you don't have another massive environmental disaster. So you take into account that moratorium, and it turns out Obama is drilling more. We are getting more natural gas. We are getting more oil production domestically. So the facts don't support Romney.
We are getting two perspectives on last night's presidential town hall debate, and we welcome yours, too, at 1-800-642-1234. We'll get to more callers after our weather break. You can also send an email, talk@WPR.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And as always, you can also vote in our online poll. Every Wednesday during the Big Question, we post an online poll, which you can reach through Facebook or on WPR.org/joy. We also welcome you, if you have a question in our on-location audience here at the Pabst Theater Pub, to raise your hand, and we'll get a microphone over to you if you have a comment about last night's debate, whether or not you think one of the candidates made a better case for your vote. So let us know. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be partly cloudy this morning, becoming mostly cloudy this afternoon with showers likely across the state. Some thunderstorms are possible in the south this afternoon. Highs ranging from around 60 in the northwest to the upper 60s in the southeast. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is our big question debate, and we want to know who made a better case in last night's presidential debate. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Owen Robinson, a columnist at the West Bend Daily News, blogger at bootsandsabers.com, and Ed Falone, associate professor of law at Marquette University. They are both joining us here on location at the Pabst Theater Pub. We are broadcasting live all morning long, talking about politics and media coverage and other issues involved in election 2012. Kathleen Dunn will be coming here at 9 o'clock. She'll be broadcasting from 9 until 11, and I know she'll be talking about the youth vote and many other issues coming up a little bit later this morning. So if you're in the Milwaukee area, please come on down, see how live radio works. You can see what we look like, what our guests look like. You can take part in our conversations from our studio audience, as I believe we have Robbie next from our studio audience. Hi, Robbie.
Hi. So I just have more of a general question. I've seen, or I saw last night, at least both candidates do this at least once. And my question is more, what's the strategy behind it? And what they do is dodge a question. So when there's a specific question about something, and then the candidate kind of sort of starts talking about it, and maybe I just can't follow them logically or something like that, but I think it may be more than that, that they just go away from it and talk about something that they want to talk about. There must be a strategy to it. There must be a reason they're doing that, but it usually just puts me off a little bit. Can you guys shed some light maybe on why they're doing that?
Owen, you want to start? Did you notice that a lot?
A little bit, and generally there's two strategies behind it. One is, if you don't like the answer you would have to give, don't answer the question. The second is that there's a limited amount of time in these debates. If you watched it, you saw the timers going off in front of them, behind them. They have a little bit amount of time to say, and there are certain things they want to make sure they say to get out there. So they try to squeeze it in questions that don't even apply.
Mm-hmm. Ed?
You know, it's a very interesting question, and I think it's a shame in our democracy that it turns out voters say they want detailed explanation of the issues, but really what's effective is reducing things to very simple themes. And the candidates who stay on a theme, you know, I'm strong on defense, I will create jobs. If there's no content behind the theme, it doesn't matter. What matters is the candidate gets associated with that theme. And so in using their answers, what they try to do is make sure that they consistently hit their theme, their message, even if it is irrelevant to the question. And it is frustrating, but unfortunately it seems to work with some voters.
We have an email from Jane who says, the question to Romney about how he would be different than President Bush was totally unfair. If the moderator wanted to make it a fair question, she could have asked Barack Obama how he is different than Jimmy Carter. Owen?
If there was balance, she's absolutely right. It's unfair. Rather than asking Romney about his plans, his history, his background, his leadership, with the Olympics or as governor of Massachusetts or in the private sector, rather than ask Romney about himself, the question was about how he's different than a president that left office 4 years ago. And without having any balance on the other side, it clearly was a biased question.
I think that, you know, Obama won the debate when the Republicans keep talking about bias and unfairness. That's the clear sign. And, you know, it's rather humorous when you have an entire cable news network, Fox News, devoted to propaganda and biased reporting, and when you actually have mainstream media actually hold a Republican candidate accountable and ask them actual substantive questions instead of just letting them give spew sound bites with no pushback. It's amazing how much the Republicans squeal and squirm.
Yeah, we're going to be talking more about a partisan media, media bias, just media coverage of election 2012 in general. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll have a panel of guests giving us their takes on the media coverage. But you wanted to say something about that, Owen?
I was just going to say, actually, many of us Republicans were squealing after the first debate about bias, and Romney clearly ran away with that one.
We have another member of our on-location audience who wants to say something. Luke is with us next. Hi, Luke.
Hi. I just wanted to say I work with a big Latino population in Milwaukee, and I wanted to know your opinion on the immigration question. I know Obama kind of ducked away from Fast and Furious, and it seemed like Mitt ducked away from the self-deportation stance he took before. What was your opinion on that, and who would actually help the Latino population more after the election?
Well, Ed Filone, I know you work a lot on those issues.
Yeah, I was disgusted by Romney's response on self-deportation. In the literature and in the policy think tank, self-deportation, the word has a specific meaning. It means make life miserable for undocumented people so that they will feel they have no choice but to leave this country. Make everything in their daily life a struggle. And then to hear Mitt Romney say, oh, by self-deportation, I wanted to give these people choices. Let them choose. Again, you know, for me, this is just another example of how Romney wants to put a veneer over his policy proscriptions. And if you actually try to hold him down on what he's advocating, he runs away from it. And I think that that's fundamentally dishonest. Immigration was the perfect example.
Owen?
I think both candidates put forth their vision of what they would do with immigration policy. I think one of the key differences here is that going back to Obama's promises during the last election, he didn't deliver. And again, he had a friendly Congress for 2 years, and he didn't even put forth an immigration proposal for that Congress to pass. So as the Latino community looks at President Obama, he's made a lot of promises. He hasn't delivered yet. I don't know why there'd be any confidence he would deliver in the next term.
Yeah, we did hear the president talk about getting rid of gangbangers, though. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we didn't expect that one to pop up, did we?
Yeah. But I'm wondering, Ed Filone, he was also, President Obama was pressed by Mitt Romney as to why he didn't pass comprehensive immigration reform, I think, with his supermajority Congress.
Well, I mean, this is the supermajority Congress that keeps getting bandied about. It was a very brief window of time when the Democrats controlled both houses, and it was never a supermajority.
2 years.
What Obama said is true. He came into office. He sat down with the Republicans who had supported comprehensive immigration reform under George W. Bush, John McCain, and said, will you be behind it again? And they backed off. McCain totally backed off and said, no, I won't support it. So, you know, it's great to say the president can magically implement a vast overhaul of the immigration laws, but if he can't get any Republican support, it's not going to happen. Immigration reform, even in the best of circumstances, is a politically charged issue that requires bipartisanship. It rarely happens in our nation's history because of that.
And yet he did manage to get through things like the stimulus and Obamacare with very, very little or no Republican support through that same Congress. Why couldn't he do the same with immigration reform?
I think that's all the more reason he's had a successful first term. It's amazing he was able to get those accomplishments through against Republican obstructionism.
We're almost out of time, so let me get you both to give closing remarks. Who made the better case in the presidential debate last night, Owen, and why?
I think, again, going back to the beginning of the hour, I think Romney made the better case on the issues. I think he did a great job of focusing on Obama's record, or lack thereof, and pointing out that through all the policies that Obama did get passed, that we currently still have a struggling economy, our foreign policy is falling apart, we're in trouble. And I know that we like to call that doom and gloom and paint that as some sort of partisan issue, but the fact is that we all know it. We look around us, we see our neighbors hurting, and we know that we need a change.
And Ed Filone.
Romney is the Potemkin candidate. On the surface, he sounds good. He has a nice suit. He has a nice haircut. He throws around numbers like 12 million new jobs, 20% tax rate cut. But you look behind the facade, and there's nothing there.
Well, that'll be last word for this big question debate. The next presidential debate, if I'm not mistaken, is Monday night. We'll talk more about that one next week. Thanks very much to Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Owen Robinson, columnist at the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. And thank you for taking part in our big question debate. Stay tuned. There's much more to come, and we're broadcasting live from the Pabst Theater Pub in downtown Milwaukee. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.